All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Today is Destination Health. Calls are starting to come in, and boy, questions are heavy already. That's excellent. But if you want to get through, I would press 1 on your phone pretty quickly here. We are going to do 2 hours. The first hour will be Destination Health. The second hour will be whatever we have for questions, Destination Health or General. And we're just going to take them in order. But if you've got a question, either one, go ahead and press 1 on your phone, and we'll get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. So I've got my co-host with me, Kim Cockerham, and this is the show where we talk about everything related to your health, fitness, training, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, medications, conditions, whatever it might be. And of course, we wrap it around that trucking lifestyle and help you figure out how to stay healthy on the road. And we're going to get to your questions in just a little bit. But I think we have a couple things we're going to talk about. Kim, did I see something somewhere about doing a show about belly bugs working better with wine or some crazy thing like that?
Yeah, I did the whole twist on the fermentation thing. And you know, I got to get it in there somewhere.
I liked it. It sure sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's all that balanced lifestyle.
Yeah, I think a glass or two of wine makes my belly bugs happy.
Exactly. That's funny.
All right. So, I was looking. We've been doing the NTP, and we've been through all the foundations, and we moved on to a couple other things. And I was looking at what was left and thought, you know what, I'm really going to wrap up the final segments here pretty quickly. And a lot of it is because of what we've already talked about, that the beauty of the NTP program is that you really don't try to target a symptom or a condition. You always work on the foundations. And as we know, if you give the body all the right nutrition and the nutrition is in the diet and you're able to digest the food, and you cover the basics, the foundations, the things we've talked about, then the rest of the stuff seems to kind of take care of itself. And if there's still something lingering afterwards, then you can target that. And that makes so much more sense to me than what we've been doing health-wise virtually my whole life. We treated our diet as though it had nothing to do with our health, or we were always chasing one fad to the next, and we go for all the buzzwords that you find in the grocery store. And instead of just eating whole real food and living a reasonably healthy lifestyle, and if we do that, all this other stuff takes care of itself. So if we have that foundation of that nutrient-dense whole food diet, then we take care of digestion and blood sugar, fatty acids, mineral balance, and hydration, the foundations. Work on those. And don't think that you have to do it overnight. Work on one at a time and take your time. And what many people find is that if you get through that process and everything's addressed, the other stuff is probably going to resolve itself. But if it doesn't, then there are some specific things we can do. So we talked a little bit about mineral balance and hydration the last couple weeks. Once we move beyond that, the areas are things like endocrine issues, the hormonal system in our body. I'm not going to go too deep into that. It's a lot of confusing terms. It's fairly complicated. And the good news is for most people, we don't have to dig too deep into that. And if you do, you really almost kind of want to work with somebody who specializes in that. If you've got a thyroid issue, that can be addressed through some supplementation and some other things. We've already handled the foundations, and that's still going on, then we would target that problem, and it's much easier to identify. And then we've got the immune system and allergy. And those two, very seldom is there a problem left over in that area if we've really worked through the foundations properly. We now know, and this is really new information, and when I say new medically, I mean within about the last decade, and every single day in this area we keep learning more. We were just joking around about belly bugs, but that's what this is all about. We have found out that not only is a huge part of our immune system in our gut, about 70 to 80% of it, but we also now know that, and this is really emerging science, something that's coming out every day, that a lot of our mood and mental issues are in our gut as well, because it's our gut and the bacteria in our gut that is responsible for creating a lot of the neurotransmitters that control moods and appetite and all kinds of other things in the brain. And if you handle digestion, the immune system lives at the very end, mostly in the large intestine, and we talked about working on digestion from north to south. And as you work your way south, everything gets better, and by the time you're done, people are amazed at what's happened with their immune system and their moods. They're not getting sick. They feel better. They're just happy for no apparent reason. So this is an area where I think take care of the foundations, it'll take care of itself. The endocrine issues, the hormones, usually they do. Sometimes we have to work a little bit. Women seem to be a little more difficult to work with in that area. But once you get there, you can target it. Then the next module would be cardiovascular health. This is a tough one. This one absolutely has to do with diet. No question about it. The heart is all about nutrition. Unfortunately, for many of us, a lot of the damage is already done. It's been a lifetime of eating the wrong food. So we may address all of the foundations, and we will improve cardiovascular health, but we may have to deal with things that are left over. You know, there are people who have already had bypasses and stents and all kinds of things. So that would have to be dealt with. But again, if you've done the foundations and you stay that way and you get some exercise and activity into your life, the cardiovascular is just going to continue to improve over time. There are some targeted things we can do there. And then the last module was nutritional detox. And I talked about this last week, saying the reason this is the absolute last is because you should never detox until all of these other things have been handled. Unless we absolutely identify that there is a real toxic problem, like a heavy metal, somebody showing symptoms of lead or some other thing, then we might move that up, but you've still got to get through some of the other things in the foundations in order to clear out those detox pathways. So that kind of wraps up the whole NTP process, and I really love it. The more I worked in it, the more I saw it, the more I see people getting results, the more it makes absolute sense in the things that are addressed, in the order that they're addressed in. And if you do this, you're really using food as medicine and addressing the cause of the problem, not just covering up symptoms with drugs. So what do you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, I listened to a webinar last week, and I'll have to send you the link to it because it was absolutely fascinating. And it was Chris Kesser. I think you get some of his,
yes,
read some of his blogs too. And then a Dr. Kelly Brogan. And they talked about how in the medical industry, and just we're used to separating the psychological from the physiological, but yet So any, you know, people are dealing with depression or anxiety, you know, they think you're just dealing with the brain, you know, it's all psychological and that. But they were talking about how, you know, and it's so true, it's all connected. It's all connected. So we can't separate the two. And it was really interesting. They were talking about, like, Chris Kester actually went through some, and he hates to use it. It was interesting, too, because he said, you know, we're so used to labeling things, like people having depression or anxiety issues, instead of talking about the symptom, you know, and look at the symptom that is going on with you and deal with that. And his journey actually took him into functional medicine and so forth. And so to look at it that way as a challenge that you're dealing with, whether psychological, physical, to work through and see where it's going to take you. And it was just absolutely fascinating, you know, and if your diet's in line, and he's a big paleo person, so his diet was all in line. So you look at that, and then after that you think, okay, now what else do I need to look at? And it might be as his was as simple as expanding the things he loves to do, you know, putting focus there. And
right.
Instead of, you know, when before we're so used to here, you know, take a pill because they're saying your serotonin level is low, but yet, you know, that's not really the case. It's other issues. So the fact of looking at, and that just really clicked with me, you know, and it makes sense. But after you hear it again, the psychological and the physical, how it all goes together, you know, you're like, we're talking the mood, digestion, all that stuff. It all is connected.
And yeah, absolutely. And it's all the foundations. Do those foundations, then mm-hmm. all of these tend to really start to come around. And what's left is much easier to target and identify what the real problem is. So great stuff. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more. I have a book recommendation today, so you might want to get ready to write that down. And then we'll get to your calls and questions. This is Destination. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host is with me, Kim Cocker-Ham. And we're wrapping up the NTP series and talking about a couple other things. And I believe both the people you were talking about, Chris Kester and Kelly Brogan, they're both MDs, correct?
Yeah, his is on the functional side. Oh, my gosh, she has so many credentials behind her. And like I said, the webinar was fascinating because she was in there and she even talked about all the people, you know, she used to prescribe medicine to, and she was handed a book called Anatomy of an Epidemic. And I think that has to do with, you know, the whole thing with the prescription medicines and everything. And it was really interesting to see where she's come with it. Very, very fascinating.
Yeah, interesting. I came across another really interesting person, and I missed this somewhere, and I know we've either talked about her or Lisa told me that you've been following her, Kat James.
Oh, yeah. Something, and I was, you know, when Lisa sent me that link to her thing, I was trying to remember when we first started Destination Health, and hopefully if they're listening, maybe they'll pop in, who shared her book and just her with us, and it's really fascinating to see what she's doing now.
Yeah, she has a program that a live event that's coming up in July,
mm-hmm.
and it's in Kansas City, and I would love to go. I'm just not sure if I'm going to be able to make it, but I'm going to start reading a lot more, and I'll tell you why. I talked about when you work through the foundations, most things handle themselves. The one that can kind of linger and we have to deal with are endocrine issues, hormonal balance,
mm-hmm.
and especially for women. And that's kind of her specialty. She seems to really focus in on getting that hormonal balance right And I haven't found a lot of really good information about that topic, and it looks like she has it. So I'm really interested, because I think that once we, you know, she, I really loved the way she put it. I was reading something, and she said, you know, the whole keto paleo thing works really, really well. But she said, you can almost guarantee it'll work on what she calls the Tarzan types. Like the guy who was probably healthy or active at one point during his life. He probably doesn't have any real hormonal issues. His diet has just gotten off track. And they do the keto paleo thing and wham, they lose 40, 50 pounds. All their symptoms go away. They feel like Superman or Tarzan. And it just works. And then people like, and that was kind of my experience with this. It was so easy for me, and it worked so well that sometimes you think, well, this will just work this way for everybody. And it doesn't. We're starting to identify some of the reasons why it doesn't. I have a new one that I will always ask this question now for men primarily. When it doesn't work for them, we have to look at statin usage. Statins, we now know, block ketone production. So you do the ketogenic diet and you get some of the benefits, but you don't get that energy and that real mood improvement, because your body now needs ketones for energy and it can't produce them because the statins are blocking it. So I've identified a couple of people. I was a little curious as to why they weren't getting the results. Turns out they're on statins.
I see.
The other one, and primarily for women, is just a hormonal imbalance, and it sounds like she really addresses that well. So I'm going to look at a lot more of her information. She's got an amazing story.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, you're speaking my language right now, because I can compare where I'm at now and when I did this in 2007. 8, 9, where it just works beautifully, you know, and so I expect the same thing to happen. Well, you know, we're 8, 9 years later, and you know, I'm dealing with hormone issues and outside, you know, just life effects, and it's frustrating. It's fascinating though at the same time, but it helps you to kind of see that, and you know, you can appreciate other people going through it as well.
Right. And the more we focus on that, the more we work on it, the more we'll find those patterns, the more we'll find the ways to fix that. So that I really want to spend some more time with her material. My book recommendation, kind of an interesting story on this one. I bought this book probably 8 or 9 months ago, and it was at a time where I had 10 and 15 books on my list all the time, and I was reading constantly. And for some reason, I just kept, I don't want to say avoiding this book, but every time I had a choice, I didn't pick this one. And I don't know why. And it turns out when we got down to the end of the NTP program, it was required reading. So I had to read it. And this, for me, was one of my favorites. Because it goes so deep into the background of the issue. And so for a lot of people, this won't be one of my first recommendations. If somebody's a big reader and they love detail, this would be. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Taub, which was just so detailed. This isn't quite that bad, but the book, I'll give everybody the book so they can write it down. It's called The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan. And
I love him.
Yes. Well, this is the first book I read by him. So now I have a whole list of them I can go read.
You know,
I think I was avoiding this because I think I kept seeing this this quote by him. And it was something along the lines of, eat real food and most of
mostly
it vegetables
plants.
Or something.
Yeah, mostly
plants. And I kept thinking, oh, it's going to be one of those vegetarian. And it's really not. It's a focus of his, but he certainly doesn't, you know, say not to eat meat or animal products. And I think that's what kept turning me off. But this book is all about our food supply in the very big picture way of we have so many options on what to eat. Never before in the history of man has we had so many options on what to eat. And he compares three different meals. One of the meals comes from our industrial food chain, which is what most of us are eating right now. Then he compares the organic chain, but not in a good way. He kind of goes into it as there is a lot of really bad advertising and a lot of misinformation, you know, using the words like organic and free range and isn't necessarily what we think it is a lot of times. Then he compares that to a true organic, natural, grass-fed farm. He goes to Joe Salatin's farm, Polyface Farms in Virginia, and does a meal there. It's really interesting. So in that, that's like the second meal is the organic, but he breaks it down into, you know, big, big organic and then really true small farms with lots of biodiversity. And then the third meal that he compares is a true hunter-gatherer meal where he raises the food or kills it himself and forages and creates a meal. But he goes so deep into each one of these that in the first, in the industrial food chain, I bet he spends 4.5 hours on corn. But it's absolutely amazing how corn has taken over the entire food supply. Mm. And we don't understand how deeply that has happened. And what we don't understand is that even though we might never eat corn, like I don't eat corn anymore, but I'm eating it a lot and I don't even know it. And he walks through the whole process from start to finish. But I'll give you an idea of how much detail he goes through as he follows each ingredient. Like he follows the corn from how the seed have been hybridized and genetically modified and planted and harvested, and it's just this incredible amount of detail. But he goes so far as to, he goes to a ranch in South Dakota and he buys a calf, and it's his, he owns it, and he follows it all the way through the system. So it only stays on that farm in South Dakota where it was born for a very short period of time. And then it gets trucked off to a cattle lot, a feedlot, a CAFO. And he goes there and he finds his calf and he follows it as it's going through. And when you understand how that whole process works, it's horrendous. I didn't realize this. I knew that eating grass-fed or corn-fed beef is not good for us, or corn-fed animals. I know it's not good for us. I didn't realize how bad it really is for everything else. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that when I get back from this break. So stick around. We'll be right back. More stuff. Kevin Rossman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host Kim Cockerham is with me, and we're talking about my book recommendation this week, The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan. And, you know, here's one of the things I learned. I didn't get this. If you take a cow and you feed it corn, it will die. It can't live on corn. It will die. Sometimes it happens really quickly because there are a couple things that can really go wrong with it. But no matter what we do, the cow would eventually die. In order to be able to feed them corn, we have to load them up with all kinds of medications to keep them alive. And there are still some things that happen that are, the cows have to be medically monitored almost constantly because of how bad corn is for them. Isn't that insane?
I was just going to say, that is absolutely insane. I think it's pretty cool that he did that. I mean, it's one of those like, why haven't anybody else done that before?
Yeah. Yeah, he buys the calf and follows it through the system and details everything that's going on. Again, for me, there's so much information and detail in this book. I love it. For some people, it might move a little slow, but I think he's a really good writer, so it's not boring. I'm interested the whole time. I love the way he writes it. So then he talks about how corn has just virtually taken over everything. And how farms used to be, they had different crops, they had different animals, and everything worked together. And now a farm is one thing. There are no animals anymore. It's corn. They plant corn everywhere they can possibly plant it. And I've heard this over the years, but I've never understood it, and I never even really knew whether it was true or whether it was those things that just keep being repeated. I know that we clearly have farm subsidy programs in the government. No, I know that, but I never really understood how they worked. And so I hesitated ever talking about them or having an opinion about it because I didn't really get it. In this book, and I followed up on the sources, it's easy to document and verify all of this stuff, but in the book, he does a really good job of explaining how it works. And it needs to stop immediately, and it's not going to. I know, because people have been complaining about this for decades, and nothing's going to change. So right as of when he wrote this book, and this changes all the time, so don't get too stuck on the numbers, but the concept is there. The numbers just change over time. In 2006, when he wrote this book, roughly that year, it cost about $2.50 a bushel to raise a bushel of corn from start to finish. Everything that it takes to produce that bushel of corn was about $2.50. Unfortunately, on the market, they were only paying $1.50 to the farmer. So how can you possibly make that work? You can't.
Right, right.
There's not only is there no profit in a bushel, there's a huge loss in every bushel. You know, there's an old joke that says about business, if you're not profitable, you have to make it up in volume. The joke is that's just stupid. If you lose money on a bushel and you produce 1,000 bushels, the more you produce, the more you're going to lose. But that's not the case in corn. We have wiped out the entire free market system because the government subsidizes that price to make every single bushel profitable no matter what. And there's no limit on how much subsidy they will pay. So the more corn you can produce, the more money you make with no risk. It's just such a stupid system, and it just encourages all this corn. And this corn ends up being cheap because the more we produce, the more the price goes down, the more the price goes down, the more the government subsidizes. So the only real companies that are benefiting are the two companies that control about 80% of all the corn in this country from start to finish, the seeds, the processing, the products that come out of it. It's ADM and Monsanto, and they own the grain, the corn silos. They own the transportation. It's just incredible. And we end up with corn in everything and everywhere. It's bad for the land. It's bad for the animals. It's bad for us. It'll make you a little crazy if you listen to this book or read it. So I want to get to this so we can get some questions before the end of the show. But he follows the whole thing all the way through the system, and he ends with a meal at McDonald's. And I wish, in a sense, he wouldn't have used McDonald's, because it's almost like, well, people are just going to say, well, it was just McDonald's. You know, and they're always the one we attack when it comes to food quality. But you know what? They're no different than any other fast food chain restaurant, big food company, the stuff we're buying in the grocery stores. It's mm-hmm. all the same. So, but he uses McDonald's. But here's what he did. He took a meal, and they went and ate it after their cow made it through the whole system, and now he could possibly be part of this beef that's in the thing. He goes to the potato farms. He goes through the whole thing, and it ends in this meal. They eat the meal, and he describes it, and he focuses on, do you realize Chicken McNuggets have 38 ingredients?
Oh, no. I've seen the pink slime yeah. that they use to make it, but, oh.
38 ingredients, and most of them are corn.
Jeez.
Yeah, including the chicken, because it was fed corn its whole life. So what he does is he finds that there are labs that can trace mm-hmm. every item back to its origination, and they can look for a marker that shows that it originated from corn or anything else, including if the animal ate that, they can tell how much of its diet was corn by doing this analysis of the food at the end. So he takes the meal, and he takes it to this lab, and he breaks it down in order of how much corn is in this food. Now, water doesn't count, so if something has a lot of water content, we're not looking at that as a percentage, because what he does is he does it by calories. So what percentage of the calories in this item comes directly or indirectly from corn? Here's the breakdown of the meal. So guess what had the highest, out of all the stuff you could possibly eat at McDonald's, guess what has the highest number of calories coming from corn?
Oh, geez. I mean, I want to go for one of the proteins.
Now, when you hear it, you're going to go, oh, no, I didn't get that. The soda, 100% of the calories come from corn.
Oh, from the 100% sugar and stuff in it?
Corn sweetener. From the corn sweetener.
Oh. Man.
It's just
okay.
pure high fructose corn syrup and
mm-hmm,
water.
Mm-hmm,
that's all it
mm-hmm.
is. So the calories, 100% corn. We never think
yeah.
about that.
No.
The milk.
We completely have given our control over to, completely given our
yeah.
control to everything we put in our bodies over to
yeah.
these big companies. Oh.
The milkshake, 78% corn.
Hmm.
The salad dressing, 65% corn. The chicken nuggets, 56% corn. The cheeseburger, 52% corn. French fries, 23% corn.
Wow.
We just ate.
And here we're...
When you eat at McDonald's or pick any fast food restaurant, any chain restaurant, any processed meal out of the grocery store, we are eating corn
mm-hmm.
on top of corn, with a side of corn, garnished with corn, and washed down with corn.
Good grief. And here we're thinking, we're no grains. We're not having any grains.
Exactly. Yeah. So even if you avoid the obvious, well, you know, let me just give you a little bit of hope. When I go for fast food now and I don't get French fries because I don't want all those carbs and the bad oils, I certainly am not getting a soda or a milkshake. I'm basically getting a burger with whatever veggies they can throw on it in a salad. So I've cut that way down, but the beef was still all fed with corn.
Yeah.
If I end up using their salad dressing that I really, really try not to, I'm getting a ton of corn there. It's just insane. Lisa just sent me a message asking, does that mean Frosty Fridays are over?
Yeah. yeah. It's all a balancing.
Now, it. Here's the other thing I found in there. now that, you know, eating out fast food McDonald's, when you and I grew up, when we were kids, that was a treat. Happened once in a while. It wasn't all that common. Now they claim one in every three children eats fast food daily. Every day, one in three. We wonder why kids are getting type 2 diabetes before they're 10.
Yep,
covered a lot of stuff today, but and we still have a segment left. What do you say we take some calls when we get back?
That sounds great. Looking forward to it.
All right. We'll be right back. We're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. We're heading into the fourth segment. We are going to come back and do another hour. It looks like I've got a lot of questions, but if you want to try pressing one, you might be able to get through in the next hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host, Kim Cockerham, is with me. Kim, we're going to get to some calls and questions, but my son, Michael, just reminded me of something in the book, and I'm glad he did, because the focus really was on corn, but he mentions many, many times in the book that next after corn comes soy, and how much soy makes it into our food supply. In fact, Michael says, and I think I've read this somewhere else before, that calorie-wise, kids are eating more calories from soy than corn. I think it's really, really close, but we are getting a huge percentage of our calories from corn and soy, which are both heavily genetically modified and hybridized. Mm-hmm. And soy has a very unique problem that you are dealing with, and we just talked about earlier in the show, which is soy is a hormonal disruptor, let's call it. It is very estrogenic. Soy has a lot of compounds that mimic estrogen in the body. And estrogen is an incredibly powerful hormone, primarily for women, but it can cause a tremendous amount of problems in men. And this is probably why that even though we address the foundations and everything should be right, isn't it interesting that the one problem that seems to be left over more than others is a hormonal issue, and we have this much of a product in our diet that interferes with hormone balance?
Yeah, that just feeds it. And, you know, soy was one of those things that people started looking at as a health item, you know, like if they're going to get off dairy, that I'm drinking soy milk. And I went that route until it was years ago. I had an awesome massage therapist, and I told her about it, and she's like, oh, she stopped immediately. She's like, get off that shit. Don't say it. And I'm like, what? You know, because I'm thinking, and it's just like, dang, you know. So, yeah, you really, really have to take a moment and really educate on what we're doing.
Yeah. So soy is a really big issue, and you're absolutely right. We were sold on soy as being a health food for years, still are. People are more and more people are realizing that it's absolutely not. But then the next thing we have to realize is it's in your diet. You've got to get away from processed food. You've got to really, really read labels, and your labels should be very simple. My rule, if it has an ingredient list, I would really like it to be an ingredient list that I know what every item is, and it's probably in my kitchen anyway. You know, it's not a heavily processed food or additive. So I'm glad that came up, because soy is a big issue, and it is part of the hormonal issue. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Pennsylvania to get started. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I recently had an abscess in my tooth, and the dentist refused to see me at all until I went through a full course of antibiotics. So that basically killed off all the bacteria in my stomach. I haven't felt the same since then. And I'm wondering, do you know of any good prebiotics that might help kickstart that a little bit? That all I have in my truck is a chest freezer. I don't have a refrigerator. So, I mean, is there something that I can do powdered or a pill or something that can be frozen?
You know, I've looked at, well, let's talk about the prebiotics, and then we'll come back to the probiotics. The prebiotics are actually fairly easy to get in a pretty natural state. I would lean towards the vegetables that have prebiotics. Asparagus is a good one. Kim just reminded me of a really easy source of prebiotics, potato starch. You can buy potato starch. It's cheap. It dissolves right in water. You can put it into, you know, drinks. I was taking a teaspoon or two, mixing it into water with lime juice or apple cider vinegar and a little bit of local honey. And it actually tasted pretty good. And there's a ton of great stuff in there. Raw apple cider vinegar is actually a prebiotic as well. Potato starch is what's referred to as a resistant starch, as long as you don't heat it up. Once we cook a potato, the resistant starch becomes absorbable starch. There is some evidence that if you take a cooked potato and put it in the refrigerator for 24 hours and then eat it cold, a lot of the starch converts back to being resistant, so the prebiotics are actually pretty easy to get in a food form, which is the way I like everything. Let's get as much of this out of our food as we can. So start with that. That one's easy, and those are all things that are easier to keep in the truck or find on a salad bar. Onions are actually prebiotic. Jerusalem artichoke is really, but that's a tough one. There are some of the bars, the really clean bars, like Dave Asprey's bars, where they use inulin or chicory root, and they use some sweeteners that are actually prebiotic sweeteners. So those are pretty simple. The probiotics, where it gets a little more complicated. I would highly recommend that you go out of your way right now to make sure you're always eating probiotic foods, lots of fermented vegetables, kefir, if you can handle the dairy of kefir. Kefir, I think, is better than yogurt. Kombucha.
Oh,
I was doing
that Kevita, just because it had. Kevita. I found a Kevita that used instead of a fruit, it used cayenne pepper for the fermentation instead of fruit to keep the calories low.
I love the Kevita because it keeps the sugars really, really low and still. And that's a whole different strain of probiotics, too. And the idea is to get as many different good strains as you can. That's why different fermented vegetables will provide different strains. The kefir provides very different strains from fermented vegetables. The Kevita is different than all the others. Kombucha would be different again. So the more fermented foods and the more different types you can get, the better. But I would recommend that you supplement with a good probiotic. I've looked at the refrigerated and frozen. It seems to be outrageously expensive, and I understand why, because of the shipping and the storage and all that. And I'm just not sure that there's any proof that it's better than powdered. Or capsules. So if you're getting a really high count and it's got
The one that I'm taking is 10 strains, 30 billion.
See, I think that's good. And I wouldn't spend the money on frozen or refrigerated. You supplement with that and you work on getting the prebiotics and the probiotics, and you have a really good chance of rebuilding good gut bacteria, but you've got to stay at it. And even when you think it's working, don't slow down, because the balance of gut bacteria can change in as little as 3 days, good or bad.
Right.
So we want to make sure you load it up and you stay in this mode for a long period of time. So far, none of the research or all of the research I've read, there doesn't seem to be any indication that you could overdo probiotics. There probably is some limit somewhere, but the idea is that the gut itself is pretty self-balancing if it has all the right stuff. You know, you're not going to get an overgrowth if you've got that good balance. So you're taking 10 strains, you're eating 3 or 4 or 5 different foods that all have different strains, and that once that good bacteria, all those different strains kind of take over, then it's self-regulating. But you got to make sure you get to that point, and you kind of, because if you don't take the good stuff, the bad stuff will populate after antibiotics. It's one of our big health problems. So you're doing the right thing. Just really be aggressive with it and stick with it.
And where would you get potato starch from? I don't think I've ever even seen that.
You know, there's a line of stuff called Bob's Red Mill. They're actually right out in Portland. Great, great company, too. They have a great story. They make all kinds of flours and a lot of milled products, and they have a potato starch that I've found in a lot of just regular grocery stores, usually in the baking aisle. But if you find a grocery store that also has more of a natural or health food section, you can find it in there as well. I think you can also go online and get it just about everywhere if you don't find it in a store.
All right, thanks.
Yep, the bag you buy is inexpensive, and it lasts a very, very long time. Thanks to Kim for that. Kim, any final words?
I was grateful for everybody coming here and sharing and learning together. So keep it up.
All right, we're going to do another hour this week. It's going to be your question. So thanks for joining me. We'll see you. Be safe. All right, here we go. We're going to do another hour. We're going to get right to your calls and questions this time.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking and beyond, and today is the beyond. It's all about destination health. This is the show where my co-host Kim Cockerham and I talk to you and answer your questions about everything health, fitness, training, nutrition, diet, food, medications, conditions, diseases, you name it. We'll talk about it. And of course, we wrap it around that trucking lifestyle of living and working on a truck, in a truck, on the road, and how you can stay healthy doing that. Kim, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Kevin.
Yeah, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on anything today. We've got a lot of questions, so we're going to get to them. Anything you want to talk about?
No, just, you know, we're 7 days into this next Focus 14 that we're doing, and I know we're going to talk about that more coming up to see where we might take it as far as, like, some focus, monthly focuses. But, yeah, just everybody who's on board with us, just step back and have them look back at their week and see what works, what didn't, you know, stay committed.
Hey, what if, and I'm just thinking out loud here, so everybody knows that's how I do things. Jump off the cliff and build the parachute on the way down.
That's right.
thinking about that monthly focus and thinking about the foundations,
right.
Why don't we build a program of monthly around the foundations, so we take each one of those things and we spend an entire month on it, working on it together? Because even though I've been through them all, I want to go back and do it again. I want to go back and focus on each one to really build those habits that will keep us in the foundations, literally for the rest of our lives. I don't want this to be, you know, you think about it one time, you move on to the next, you forget what. I want it to be one of those things where we spend so much time on each mm-hmm. one of the foundations, like a month together, that when the month is over, we all have really good habits in place so we don't ever have to think about it again.
Yeah, and you know what? I just posted that yesterday or day before yesterday on the Destination Health Facebook page. Fire Nation, I think you had showed us Fire Nation when we were out there one time. He had a really great post on habits and that they take work. And, you know, they're hard, but you got to stick with them to make them stick. And so the thought of putting more focus to, you know, breaking it down the foundation sounds like an awesome idea and we'll all be doing it together. So it will help everybody
yeah.
stick with it. And by the end of each month, man, what progress we all could make.
Yeah. So I love that idea. I've been trying to do it more and more myself. So to be able to do it as a group, as of all of us, will just make it that much easier. And you know, sometimes they can seem like such simple things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet if we don't build the habit, let me give you an example. I have a great habit that I absolutely love. I don't ever worry about slipping up on this one. And it's bulletproof coffee. I never miss.
Mm-hmm.
I have my cup every morning. And you know, I've been using that as a way to make sure I'm doing other good things. Like, for example, we know that cinnamon is really good for you. Cinnamon has a ton of incredible properties. Well, how much cinnamon do you actually eat in your diet? And I'll just use myself. Prior to this habit, like zero. Or anything I might get in some, especially since I don't eat dessert anymore, I would probably get zero. But it's such an easy thing to add cinnamon to my bulletproof coffee every day. And now I go through these big bottles of cinnamon in a month or two, more than I've eaten my whole life. And we know that's a good thing. Mineral balance. We all struggle with mineral balance, keeping that sodium, potassium, magnesium balance. Well, it's easy to put a little cap full of that light balance in my bulletproof coffee every morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new
mm-hmm.
habit. I never miss it. So some of these things, you know, if we focus and we think about that, how can we make this more enjoyable? How can we make it easier? How can we make this habit something we're just not going to miss? And the other thing that I find, if you get through a month of just forcing yourself to do it, by the time the month is over, some of it is psychological, but some of it is just practical. I figured out that the best way for me to have mineral balance and not forget it is to put it right next to where I keep my coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
when I reach to get a coffee, it's right there. I can't miss it. And you just, the more you focus on it for a month at a time, the more you pick up on little things and tips and tricks that are going to make it easier to make those really healthy habits part of what we do every day.
Yeah, that's great. And I think you find that you naturally start, like you just said, like with the light balance and with the cinnamon. And you may have tried other things, but they didn't stick. You know what I mean? And these
right.
spoke to you because it's probably the things that you need. So
exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, so, you know, that I love that. So we'll work on that, and we'll come up with something here soon. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Minnesota. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin and Kim. Hope you guys are having a great day today.
Hi, Brad.
Absolutely.
I had a couple questions, actually. One on fermented vegetables. What do I need to get started? And once I have all that together, how do I get started?
Got it. Okay, so tell me what your favorite vegetable is.
My favorite, I really like asparagus and broccoli, cauliflower. I kind of like a little bit of everything, and I also like carrots a lot.
Excellent. Boy, those are all really good choices. Here's why. I think of the fermented vegetables that I've done and got people to try them. I probably get the most positive response out of asparagus. Fermented asparagus is really, really good. And it's easy. And not only are you getting the really good probiotics because it's fermented, the asparagus comes packaged with good prebiotics. So it's a really great choice to get started with. And cauliflower is one of my favorites. That pickles really well or ferments really well. Carrots are always a good addition. You could even take all three of those. You could do a jar with cauliflower, asparagus, and carrot if you wanted. It's actually a good combination. Or do one, whatever you want. But those are great choices. So here's what you need. Let's say we're just going to do asparagus to keep it simple. You need good, fresh, organic asparagus if you can get it. If not, just get good, fresh, conventional asparagus. You need a 1-quart wide-mouth mason jar. And you need clean water. I like spring water. And you need 2 tablespoons of salt, and you are ready. That is it right there. That's everything you need. The asparagus, the jar, the water, and the salt. Done.
Perfect.
That simple. A quart of water, 2 tablespoons of good quality sea salt. I like pink Himalayan, but any sea salt is really good. Color in salt means minerals. So if you see dark-colored sea salts, those have minerals. And when you see the pink Himalayan, that has minerals. So color is always good when we're looking at salt. And make sure it's not artificial, and it shouldn't be, that it's just color that's in it naturally. 2 tablespoons of salt dissolved in the water. Clean the vegetables. Chop them to fit in that jar. Pour the brine, which is the water and the 2 tablespoons of salt. Pour it over so it covers completely, put the lid on, set it somewhere at about 70 degrees or so is ideal, 70 to 72, 74, still okay. The warmer it is, the quicker it's going to happen. If you're down in the 68 degrees, it's going to take a day or two longer. The target date for asparagus, right at about 4 days. You want to look for some activity in the jar. You want to see bubbles. You want to hear some pressure every time you open it. And I would open it, just crack it once a day or so. And you want to start to notice a vinegary taste. You could also use pH tape and test, but I stopped doing that a long time ago because you can just tell when they're done. There's activity. You got that vinegary taste. And on that 4th day, whether or not you leave it out after that is totally up to you. If you taste it on the 4th day and you like the texture and the taste, then you can put it in the refrigerator and it stops fermenting. The longer you leave it out, the stronger it will get, the softer it will get, and the more probiotic it will get. But that's it. It's any combination. Throw in some chili peppers if you like heat. Throw in some garlic if you like garlic. Nothing else changes, though. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim Cockerham is with me. This is Destination Health. Kim, we got to get you on the fermentation train.
I wrote it down. I wrote everything down again. That's so funny.
So what is your favorite vegetable?
The green beans, fresh green beans.
Oh, green beans are really good pickled too. They stay so nice and crunchy and Yeah, green beans are a really good one. Green beans with some garlic and dill.
Okay. Oh, that's a good idea because I like dill too.
Yeah. Yeah, garlic and dill really work well on green beans, yeah. And I like a little heat. And the cool thing about the fermentation process tends to mellow out the heat. Like I started off putting in jalapenos for the heat, and for me it was just too mild. I actually moved to habaneros. And I hardly ever put habaneros in anything because they're so crazy hot. But the fermentation process really mellows them out. So, and I like heat. So habaneros work really well for me. So we're expecting a report soon.
That and the bone broth. Those are my post-its on my desk.
You know, the fermentation, I jumped right in. It seems so simple. Once I got over the fact that if you look it up online, you find 87 different ways of doing it, and it's confusing. And it turns out that there's so much leeway in how much salt you use, how many days you leave it out. But the good news is they all worked. I've tried a bunch of different ways, so it's really forgiving. I will tell you one thing to watch out for. If you find that you've done everything right and it didn't ferment, you don't get the bubbles and the pressure and all that. One of the reasons I've kind of identified with some people is that they used tap water, and tap water has chlorine. They chlorinate the water to kill bacteria. Well, we're trying to grow bacteria.
Right.
So you've got to watch that. Purified water, spring water, make sure your water source doesn't have chlorine in it. That will really halt the fermentation process. Once in a while, it can still work, but you really want to stay away from tap water or any source with chlorine. I think Brad had another question about exercise. Brad, did you have another question?
Yeah, I did. I just wanted your opinion on the, you know, the 5x5 that a lot of people do, you know, five sets of five reps. And do you think that works? Is that too excessive, or what is your opinion on that?
Here's the thing for me, and you know, it was interesting because my first business was a gym when I was 19, and I can look back now and see that every single time I have ever worked out in my life, I was probably overtraining. In a resistance exercise, I think it is incredibly easy to overtrain, and it doesn't do any real damage. It's just a waste of time. You can get the same results out of a lot less time invested if you do it right. I think five sets is overkill on one exercise or one muscle. Honestly, I will tell you the most time-effective workout I have ever done, one set per body part, and I can get through an entire full-body workout in 20 minutes, and I get incredible results, as much or more than when I used to work out 2 hours a day. When I had the gym, because I could, I was there anyway, I was working out 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I thought because I was only doing a muscle group every third day that I wasn't overtraining. But I was. I mean, it's easy. There's a method of weight training that I'm trying. I'm not now because I'm on the road. But I'm really interested in. I've tried it a couple times. It's really difficult to do, but if you do it, and I'm sure it's like everything else, if you get used to it, it's not going to be as difficult anymore. It's called super slow. If you want to read a lot of good information about it, Dr. Mercola's site, mercola.com, has a lot of videos and some really good information. And it's heavy weight, very minimal number of reps, but incredibly slow movement. So it's really interesting, and when you watch it, you're going to be surprised at how slow we're talking about. But you can get a really amazing result for very little time invested. So that's really what I would recommend. Higher weights, higher intensity, and much, much shorter duration.
Good, yeah. And I'm a big fan of the Bowflex dumbbell, adjustable dumbbell sets. Those are wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
They have the two different sizes, and, you know, you got both sizes, and, well, you can do a lot of stuff with those.
You absolutely can. Yep, even on the road. So check out that super slow and try that. Here's the other thing I will say about exercise. Kim, you know, we talk a lot about bio-individuality when it comes to food and diet, that one person might be able to handle 80 grams of carbs a day and stay in ketosis. Somebody else might have to be under 20. That one person, you know, thrives on good, you know, fermented dairy, and for somebody else, it's the worst thing they could be eating. We are very bio-individual. We talk about it in nutrition, but I honestly believe there's a lot of that going on in training as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
people respond differently to different types of training. So what I would say is educate yourself as much as you can and then try different ideas. You know, I used to think that 6 day a week, you know, 2 hours a day, really, really hitting a muscle group hard until it was totally fatigued was the way to go. And maybe for some people it is, but I find that I get much better results from a lot less work.
Yeah, and it's the same as with our diet lifestyle. It has to be something that you can stick with. So I like how you said that, you know, learn and find what works for you, because it's exactly what we're talking about with what we eat and put in our body. And it's the same thing with exercise, and it doesn't have to be the all or nothing thing. Jeff out at CMC helped really open our eyes up to showing us just to be aware of what you can do during the day. And I love like the slow that you're talking about, the slow and just really concentrated effort. But find what works for you and get on this train of getting fascinated with what works and try it and just keep going, because it's just like our diet. It's not an end to this. This is part of our lifestyle.
Yeah, great point. Let's see. We're going to head off to Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Kim.
Hi, Herschel.
Hey there.
I am definitely ignorant today, on the edge of stupid, and a simple question, and then I have a question a little more detailed.
Okay, sure.
A friend of mine that works at the warehouse I pick up at every day got himself some chickens this spring, and now they're laying eggs, and he doesn't feed them anything other than what they find walking around in the backyard.
Excellent.
So he brought me a dozen eggs. And they're really wild. I mean, kind of like Easter eggs. They're green, and they're pale brown, and they're almost pink. They're all different colors. So,
yes.
So he gives me the eggs, and then they proceed to tell me something that I really think your answer is going to say he's screwing with you. He tells me that when you crack these eggs and you go to cook them, you got to get the rooster seed out, because those things will make you sick when they're grown that way. I thought, come on, you're telling me a lot of nothing.
Okay, that's
said,
a new one.
And I don't know. He said, oh, yeah, you know that white stuff you see in the egg when it's still liquid? Yeah. You got to get that out of there. That'll make you sick. Well, crying out loud. I never heard of that.
Neither have I. I have learned to if I don't know something for sure, I'm not going to comment one way or another, but I can tell you I have eaten a lot of eggs and never looked to find the rooster sperm first, or whatever he called it.
Me?
And eggs never make me sick, and I eat a lot of natural eggs like that. In fact, we talked about a thing the Chinese do. I think they call it a that might not be the thousand year egg. The Chinese do a couple weird things with eggs, but one of them is they literally let the chicken, the baby chicken, mature completely in the shell, and then they eat it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
really,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. And everybody I've talked to or seen that has tried it says it's really mild. It's not, you know, weird or anything. So yeah, I think he's messing with you. Let me get to a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about more stuff right after this. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim Cockerham is with me, and we're talking with Herschel in Ohio. So, Herschel, just crack those things open and eat them any way you want them. The less you cook them, the better.
I guess now I need a disclaimer to the DOT for all the wrecked trucks that everybody's laughing at that question. Anyway.
We just lost the whole Tribe Care team on the... rooster one. They're gone.
Yeah.
The question that has some detail to it, Kevin, I've talked to you and Kim, you also. I'm still wrangling with stuff that goes on in my head. And now you were talking about the corn and the soy, and soy is my worst offender. And I'm wondering if there is some kind of hormone, some kind of imbalance that maybe is what it is. I struggled badly with self-worth last week. Dirt track racing is one of the things that I absolutely love to go do. I've done it driving the car. I've done it watching the cars. And last week they had a big sprint car race. The NASCAR guys were there. It was a big one. Been waiting all season to go, looking forward to it. And when the day comes, my head says no. You don't deserve to go. You are taking, and this part is true, you are taking a $200 pay cut weekly to you and the job that you're currently doing. You need to save every nickel that you have. So I didn't go, and let's say I lived in a pretty dark cloud for 2 or 3 days. It finally went by now, but I know it'll come back. I cannot get a grip on it. Do you have any idea what in the world to do? I am so sick of living with this. I don't know what to do. I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, let's try the nutrition way first. And everything I've seen, it will make a tremendous difference. You know, we treat this, you know, any type of symptom like this, the same way we treat medical stuff. They say, okay, it's a lack of dopamine or it's a lack of serotonin and we're going to give you this drug and it never works.
Yeah,
it covers up.
I don't want to do that.
Exactly. But we also know now that it is those neurotransmitters that are responsible for our moods, but we've got to create them naturally. And we do that through nutrition. So what I would recommend is that you pursue, I would have you look up, I'm missing her first name right now. Natasha Campbell McBride. She's a doctor. Natasha Campbell McBride. She is the one that created the GAPS diet. And GAPS stands for Gut and Psychology Protocol. So, or I forget what the S is. But it's focused on the gut and psychology because it, and she's a gastroenterologist and she's got all kinds of other wild credentials. And she was one of the early pioneers that found out it is the health of our gut that produces all of those neurotransmitters that we need. Very little of that is actually produced in the brain. It's produced in the gut. And her diet is a really strict gut healing. So you've certainly seen some benefits from what you've been doing, but you're one of those cases where you've still got some lingering issues, and this comes back to a foundation. You need more help in the digestive area first. And hers is probably the best protocol that I know. You could do a Whole 30. There are some other elimination diets, but I really think hers, and she's got some great books on this issue as well, hers really focuses on getting the gut healthy and with the aim of improving all of those neurotransmitters, and then the psychological issues tend to fix themselves.
Very interesting.
Pop in there, Kevin, because it was kind of along the lines, and I actually sent Herschel that link to that webinar too. If he, you know, he's working so hard on nutrition, and Herschel, you were talking about that thing you love to go do with the dirt racing, right? But yet you talked yourself out of it. But that might be exactly something you need because that enriches your life in a different way. And you've got to put some, I mean, I encourage you to, you know, when we say you are worth it with our texts and stuff like that, it's putting you first. And that is just another piece to it that a lot of us don't allow us to do because we feel like, like you said, like you don't deserve it or that money should be spent elsewhere. But yet I think it's all part of that health and package that I hope you put some time to and let yourself do that.
Well, I can tell you, Kim, that I've got it to the point now. You know, I was a 2015 CMC. The main reason I wasn't at 2016 is the same, and I really struggled with coming to 2015, but I made myself do it. It now's to the point where I go to work every day, and on the weekend I work on the house. In the evening I work on the house. Dinner's ready for my wife when she walks in the door. That's it. That's all I do because that in my head is that's all I'm allowed. That's it, Jack. That's it. So, yeah, it's really old. It's been going on for years.
Mm. Yeah, watch that webinar.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. That's a great point, Kim. So check out those two things. Check out that. Check out the GAPS diet. And, again, it's Natasha Campbell McBride. She was actually a neurosurgeon.
Does she have
really
an audio
good
book on this?
I believe she does. I'll look for that when I get a chance. But I think there's got to be something she does on audio. There's tons of information about the GAPS diet. In fact, a lot of NTPs, maybe not a lot, but several NTPs that I know of are also GAPS certified. So you can get a certification in the GAPS diet to work with people on that protocol. It's that popular.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome. And as always, keep us informed. Let's go to Kentucky. Raymond, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you, Kevin and Kim?
Hi, Raymond.
Good.
My question is, I've been trying to learn more about the keto diet. And well, let me, is it okay, like when I'm home, I cook like two eggs with green peppers, usually all three colors, and onions and mushrooms. Is that a bad thing or is that?
No, that's not a bad thing at all. In fact, I do a lot of that kind of eating. On the keto diet, let's identify what it means first. Ketogenic, keto diet, when we say that word, we mean that your body has gone into a state of ketosis. And what that means is it stopped burning sugar for energy, and it converts over to burning fat for energy. And we know that it's happened if we measure the ketone levels in our body. And we can measure it through blood. We can measure it through breath. You can do it with urine strips. I'm not real wild about those. But we know that our body has gone into this state of ketosis, and it's burning fat for energy. And that's the goal. We want to get into and stay in ketosis until we reach a goal, or we may stay there forever. I mean, I've been in a pretty perpetual state of ketosis for about a year and a half, well, over a year now. And I do go in and out at times, but I stay in it most of the time. So
the way we do that,
we want to measure it, because for some people, I mentioned this before, they can eat a lot more carbs and stay in ketosis. And if you can eat, let's use one of the high numbers. If you could eat 80 grams of carbs a day and stay in ketosis, then I would eat 80 grams of carbs a day. They would just be all really good carbs. The things you just mentioned, peppers, mushrooms, onions, they're all fairly high carb for a vegetable, but they're all really good. So, yeah, you do want to eat as many good carbs as you can and stay in ketosis.
Okay, well, see, the doctor says that I'm pre-diabetic, and I'm overweight. So I've lost 30 pounds, gained a couple back. I went on vacation. But I've got to get back into it. And that's what I was wondering about, the peppers and onions, and I even put jalapenos in there. But I know they have carbohydrates, but that turns into sugar, so that's probably not good for me then, right?
Well, Let me get to a break, and I'm going to come back. And we'll talk about this, because this is a really important point, so I want people to get this. So stick around. We'll be right back with that. Kevin Huff. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim Cockerham is with me. This is Destination Health. We're talking with Raymond in Kentucky about the keto diet and vegetables. So knowing that you're pre-diabetic, you are going to be more insulin resistant. We know that. So your carb number is probably going to be lower. The good news is, not only can the pre-diabetes or even full-blown type 2 diabetes be completely reversed, over time you can get your insulin sensitivity back. So over time, and when I say over time, depending on how extreme it is, it may be a year or two or three, that you would have to stay very low carb. But over time, you'll get that insulin sensitivity back, and you'll be able to add more carbs back in. We just want to keep them healthy. If you're going to get carbs, it should be from the things you were just talking about. I would not worry too much about going overboard with those. What I would recommend is that you monitor your ketone production. And I would get the breathalyzer. It's $150, and then you're done. You don't have to buy strips. You can use it as many times a day as you want. I've tested it against the blood strips, and it's accurate. It works. And the quickest way you're going to turn this around is by staying in full-blown ketosis. And
Great.
You just need to identify what that number is.
I also bought a pressure cooker, so I try to cook meat, you know, and then take it with me in my truck.
Good.
And I was in too much. I was in a little bit of a hurry when I did this run. It was a last minute thing, so I just bought a pure beef bologna and some cheese, like pepper jack cheese and jalapeno cheese. Is that a bad thing?
No, those are good high fat, low carb foods. And in the beginning,
you just can't eat a lot of them, right? Like sometimes I want to eat four or five pieces of bologna.
Yeah. So what I want you to do there is find a way to add fat to that meal, like a really good quality mayonnaise, either one you make yourself or Primal Foods. Primal Foods makes a couple. They make a plain mayonnaise. They make a chipotle lime. And they are the exact same ingredients I would use when I make it in my kitchen. There's nothing weird in there. It's really good avocado oil. And the fat is going to satisfy your appetite. The protein, you know, both the bologna and the protein are going to be, or the bologna and the cheese are going to be high in protein. So you don't want to overdo those. You want to add fat. Let me give you a really good website for dealing with the type 2 diabetes and staying in that high-fat, low-carb diet. It's called Diet Doctor, dietdoctor.com.
Dietdoctor.com. Excellent.
He does more on using the high-fat, low-carb diet for people with diabetes, pre-diabetics. He's got tons and tons of great stories of people who have reversed really bad, full-blown type 2 diabetes, and it's gone completely.
Well, my A1C number was like a 6.2 or 6.3.
That's climbing. I mean, no question. You want to get that number back down.
My doctor was wanting to, she goes, well, I'm going to put you on this pill. And then I talked to my friends and they were said, no, you don't want to take that shit because they're on it. And they said, just lose a bunch of weight. You got to do something not to be on that pill because I guess it has side effects.
I agree. And if you don't have to start it, and with this diet, you won't. In fact, if the people who are on those pills, within days, sometimes they have to start dropping their dosage. So the fact that you haven't started is good, and you can turn this around completely with diet.
Great. And on the meat end, I know you say the grass fed. I don't know what I'm buying when I'm buying it at the store. I try to talk to the butcher. Some of the butchers look at me like I got two heads.
Here's the thing, that the grass-fed and finished, which is important. It can't just be grass-fed. It needs to be grass-fed and finished. Grass-fed and finished is so different and expensive, I'll say that you will know when you're getting it. You have to know that it came from a farm that was truly grass-fed and grass-finished. And you're not going to find it at the conventional grocery store. You're probably not going
to
find it at the butcher. You don't even find grass-fed, grass-finished at Whole Foods. I mean, even though Whole Foods is, you know, very high-end, very natural, very organic, it's pretty rare at Whole Foods many times to find true grass-fed, grass-finished. Most of mine either from local farms, or that we're starting to find some really good web-based companies. And I'll give you a couple that I've used. ButcherBox is one of my favorites.
I saw one on your website. Is that?
Yeah. Yep. ButcherBox
is
one of my favorites. CrowdCow is another really great service. I use TexasGrassFedMeats.com I've used to order. They have great quality stuff. USWellnessMeats.com has really good stuff. And Slanker Grass-Fed Meat. So it's becoming more common but a lot of it is still internet based. There are places where you can find it local, but it's pretty rare. You still have to really seek it out, and it's not going to be hidden. Like, you're not going to look at a package and wonder if it is or not. It is or it isn't. And if it isn't clearly marked and you can't trace it back to the farm, then it's probably not grass-fed, grass-finished.
Right. What's okay, in the event that I'm going to definitely look into that, but in the event a person couldn't get a hold of that, what's the best way to buy the meat?
You know, this is kind of one of the things that Whole Foods has done well. They have a program, like a 5-step, I think it is, and they clearly mark each cut of meat, step 5 being the best, the cleanest, and they explain exactly what that means. And then in step 4, that's Whole Foods, the health food store. So step 1 is just kind of a little better than conventional. Step 2 is a little better. Step 3 is better. Step 4 is better. Step 5 is the best quality they have. So there's a whole range of quality. You know, beef could be organic, but certainly not grass-fed. Well, at least it's organic. Maybe that's a little better than just conventional. If it was raised on grass but then finished on grain, that's not great, but it's better than being in a feedlot its whole life. So this is an area where you need to get some education and just do the best you can. And, Kim, we talk about this a lot, that there's certainly a target we're shooting for. When it comes to meat, I'd love to be able to walk down and be able to talk to the farmer and know that that's where my cow came from. That's probably
right.
The ultimate. But we're not going to get there overnight. We may not ever get there, especially being on the road. But the more you learn about this, and if you use services right now, easy, like ButcherBox or CrowdCow, and you have it shipped to your house and you freeze it. It comes frozen anyway. Leave it frozen. The more we seek out, you made a statement earlier, the more we're aware of it. You know, we're not going to be perfect, but be aware of it. Always be on the lookout for a better quality food, whether it's vegetables or meat or cheese or dairy. Just always be aware that there's a quality issue and be seeking out the best you can get. And if you can't get, the ideal, don't beat yourself up. Do what you can and keep working towards this.
I had to check out the Butcher Box. Is that what you said? Because CrowdCow does not come to Florida. So.
Oh, that's right. You're right. CrowdCow is still very regional, mostly Pacific Northwest, but they're growing. Butcher Box will ship anywhere. And
okay.
I get a big box from Butcher Box every month. It's a subscription. The cool thing is it's kind of fun because you don't know what cuts you're getting. You just say, this many pounds of beef, this many pounds. And ButcherBox has beef, pork, and chicken. So you say, I want this much beef, I want this much pork, I want this much chicken. And every month a box shows up and you get that much beef, pork, and chicken. You just don't know what cuts you're getting.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of fun. Oh, boy, there's the music. Anything you want to close with?
Just have everybody go to their phones and sign up for our text alert by texting LT Health to 99,000.
That's excellent. Text LT Health to 99,000 and join us. We're going to continue on with this program, and we have some great ideas. So, as always, thanks, Kim. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin. All right, everybody, thanks, and we'll see you on the weekend for the live show.